It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Construction is well underway for Foxconn Technology Group's site in Mount Pleasant. A public hearing was held last night regarding the height of the Generation 6 manufacturing facility the company needs for production. A reporter who was at the hearing will bring us the details and give us an update on the project's progress. What questions do you have about the Foxconn facility? Are you confused about the timeline? Were you at last night's hearing, and what was your takeaway? Are the Village of Mount Pleasant and State of Wisconsin handling the regulation of Foxconn fairly, in your opinion? Do you live in Mount Pleasant? How has your community changed since the Foxconn deal? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org if you want to join our discussion. Rick Rommel is a reporter who covers business news for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was at last night's public hearing regarding Foxconn's facilities in Mount Pleasant. Rick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, John. How are you doing this morning?
Pretty good so far, but the day is young. What was this hearing last night? What was it about? Why was it held?
It was a hearing for what they call a conditional use permit for Foxconn to exceed the normal Village of Mount Pleasant limits on height of buildings, which is, I think, 40 feet. And the Foxconn plant basically is going to be 48 feet high. There are some parts of it that'll be a little higher, but 48 feet for the primary height. So they can do that under the village ordinances, but they need this conditional use permit.
Okay.
And if you're going to give a conditional use permit, I guess you have to hold a public hearing, which they did, and which was very, very sparsely attended.
I was going to ask, who showed up?
Yeah, almost nobody. The only person who spoke was one of the last property owner holdouts in the Foxconn area, a woman by the name of Kim Honey. And Kim has been a frequent critic of the Village of Mount Pleasant and the way it's handled the Foxconn deal. She speaks at many village board meetings in the public comment section just before the meetings start. So she was the only one who spoke, and it was all over in about 7 minutes.
The whole hearing, or just her part of her speaking?
No, the whole
part?
Hearing, the entire hearing. Yeah.
Okay. These conditional use permit hearings are pretty pro forma most of the time, anyway, aren't they?
Apparently, they are. It's been a while since I've actually covered one. Probably more than 30 years, to tell you the truth.
Why do you think as much attention as this entire project has gotten, both positive and negative, why do you think this hearing was so sparsely attended?
That's a really good question. And I thought that more people would show up, just because it would be an opportunity, a public forum where you could come in and state your opinion. But I think that in Mount Pleasant anyway, and for people who live there and are living with the construction and such day by day, and the future in which there's going to be this large complex, industrial complex, I think people perhaps have pretty much accepted this is the way it is now. We're going to go forward, and the time for voicing strong criticisms or strong support has passed, and now this is just a fact of life there.
So the public hearing was sparsely attended, and the outcome, was it ever in doubt? I mean, I'm assuming that the use permit was granted.
Yeah, they don't do that yet. I think that goes before the Village Plan Commission. I believe it's this afternoon. I would expect that, yes, they will grant this permit. The staff has recommended that it be granted. And, there's really nothing unusual about it. So I'd be amazed if it were not granted.
There have been several similar hearings like this held since the project began. How would you summarize how they usually go?
Well, what really got people's kind of dander up locally in Mount Pleasant was the were the proceedings on the village acquiring land to provide to Foxconn for its development. And that was a year ago, more than a year ago. People were, especially there were dozens, scores, I think, of folks who have homes that are in the Foxconn development area. And they, some of them didn't want to leave. Some of them thought that the price that the village was offering for their property was insufficient. And there was a lot of controversy then, but that's all in the past now. Almost everyone has sold their property to the village. Many, I think, would argue under duress or the threat of losing their property by eminent domain. And that generated a lot of heat. But as I said, project's moving forward now. I took a spin through the construction area yesterday. A lot of earth-moving equipment, scraping and clawing at the ground there. They have Foxconn has prepared this, what they call a building pad for this factory that they intend to build. It's a 993,000 square foot facility. And they haven't actually started vertical construction of that yet, but they have awarded contracts to do that work.
Mm-hmm. We talked with Keith Haas last week, general manager of Racine's wastewater facility, and here's what he had to say about the Foxconn facility.
We've certainly seen watching Oak Creek and Franklin grow and Kenosha grow leaps and bounds, and nothing has happened in Racine for likely 5 decades except for industrial decay, I guess I would say. So this is a bright spot in the area and some of the first good news we've had in decades.
Do you get the, Rick, do you get the sense that local or regional residents are now kind of excited about the economic development that this project could bring?
There definitely are people who feel that and some who feel it pretty strongly. I mean, look, even if the Foxconn plant ends up employing, 3,000, 4,000 people, as opposed to the 13,000 Wisconsin jobs the company continues to say it will create, that's pretty big. I think in any community that would be a big economic boost. The questions arise over what is the public paying to get this economic boost.
The water diversion from the Great Lakes for the Foxconn plant was recently held up in court. What happened there? What were the claims? Oh, you know what? We're going to take that question in just a minute. We're going to pause our conversation with Rick Rommel, a reporter who covers business news for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and has covered the Foxconn story. When we come back, we'll talk about that water diversion and what happened in court. And take your calls at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 about Foxconn and its ongoing development. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Taiwanese electronics maker Foxconn is building a factory in Mount Pleasant. A brief hearing about the height of its facility, which the company has said will build LCD screens, was held last night. We were talking about that a little bit, and we're also going to talk about the project's progress with Rick Rommel. He's a reporter who covers business news for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was at last night's conditional use permit hearing. Listeners, what questions do you have about the Foxconn facility? Specifically, if you're somebody who lives in that area, you're a southeastern Wisconsinite, are you excited about what Foxconn could mean for the area, even if it doesn't eventually produce 13,000 jobs? Would you like to see the Valley fully the Wisconn Valley fully realized? Are you hoping to gain employment in tech manufacturing? Maybe you work in manufacturing now. What's your take on how things are rolling out with Foxconn? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. Rick, the water diversion from the Great Lakes for the Foxconn plant was recently held up in court. What happened here? What are the claims that were made on in this case?
Right. So I believe the petition was for diversion of 7 million gallons of water from per day from Lake Michigan. And they use a, when you're making these LCD displays, you use a lot of water, It's a very hyper clean manufacturing process. So they go through all this water. Anyway, it happens that the village of Mount Pleasant is part of the village of Mount Pleasant is within the Great Lakes Basin. Part is within the Mississippi River Basin. In fact, the dividing line, I think, runs right through the site of Foxconn's planned factory. Anyway, that means that in order to take water from Lake Michigan for use in Mount Pleasant, the State Department of Natural Resources has to give its approval. And the approval was challenged by a group of several environmental groups. The issue went before administrative law judge recently, and the administrative law judge said it's okay. They can do this under the Great Lakes Compact. So they're going ahead with, or they can go ahead with taking this water, and we'll see what happens from there.
Foxconn has changed their plans regarding the size of the screens they'll be manufacturing there. Do we know if this also changes the amount of water that they'll need?
I'm no expert on the manufacturing process. I would think that it does, because initially, we're talking about building a plant that would use these, start with sheets of glass the size of a garage door, basically. And there's now that they'll be using pieces of glass that are considerably smaller, so the surface area is less. I would think that would mean you would need less water. So that very possible that that they would need less than this than they are allowed to take under the ruling.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, before the hearing, we learned a little more about what the Foxconn facility will look like. What do we know now?
It's a low slope. Well, it's 48 feet high, but it's very long. I think it's 1,600 feet long and 500 some feet wide. So from the drawings I've seen, it looks like any kind of ordinary industrial building you'd see in a business park. Kind of has a warehousey look to it, I would say. But they're talking about doing all this landscaping around it, literally hundreds of trees, and they even specified the types of trees that would be planted there. There's a Japanese themed garden at the main entrance, and it won't. I mean, it's not going to like stand out real prominently in the landscape there, unless you're right next to it, because it's You know, it's not a skyscraper, a tower, or anything like that. Long, low industrial building.
The village of Yorkville recently received a design submission for a 28-acre retail development. What do we know about this proposal?
Yeah, so that's one of the at one of the freeway interchanges on I-94 at Highway 11. Very close to the Foxconn area. And there's been a lot of interest among real estate people in that those types of areas, because if you're going to have thousands of folks coming in to work and such at new industrial development, then that could generate traffic for gas stations and hotels and restaurants and that sort of thing. So that's exactly what these folks are proposing. It's a real estate company out of San Diego. They bought the land less than a year ago. And they basically have a small retail complex laid out, kind of a village style complex, it looks like to me from the plans, with about 90,000 square feet of retail space, a couple of restaurants, limited service hotel, a gas station, and a couple of fast food places. Mm-hmm. It would replace what's now a baseball park. And I think there's a small kind of old motel on that property. I talked to the owner of the company that plans to develop this, and he sounded, as many real estate developers do, like, we will do this, take this gradually, you know, see what happens. They're not going to come in and create this entire retail complex all at once. They're going to take it slowly and see how demand unfolds.
At times, it's felt hard to keep up with all the updates regarding Foxconn's plans in this state. Let's talk about what they've already done. You cruised through the site. It's the footprint, over 900,000 square feet of land usage. Still, that seems is a bit small in terms of a percentage of the space that Governor Walker was predicting when this project was first proposed. Where are we in terms of the progress totally on getting this thing up?
We're not very far along if you want to consider it in light of what the governor and Foxconn had said originally. 20 million, I think 22 million square feet of factory office research complex. And Governor Walker, I know in a op-ed that he wrote shortly after the Foxconn development was unveiled, talked about 20 million square feet. So yeah, it's less than about 5%, a little less than 5%. They have one building that is constructed on the site. It's 120,000 square foot, what they call a multi-purpose building. It was finished in December. As far as I can tell, it is not being used, has not been used. And, you know, there's that and the plans that are ongoing, and they're proceeding with this to build the first factory.
And they've also made it clear that they're invested in Wisconsin as a whole. They proposed innovation centers around the state. What would these centers look like? How would they function?
Well, we don't know, because as far as I know, anyway, they haven't launched the innovation centers yet in Racine, Green Bay, Eau Claire, Milwaukee, and eventually in Madison. They have bought property in all of those cities, but it does not appear that the innovation centers are functioning at this point.
Okay. State government plays a role in the Foxconn story. Governor Walker signaled hopes for a Wisconn Valley. like a Silicon Valley when he made the deal with Foxconn. Tax benefits are tied to the number of jobs they create in the state. How are they doing on that 13,000 job goal, or is it just way too soon to tell?
Well, yeah, I would say it's way too soon to tell. As has been widely reported, Foxconn missed its first year target to qualify for tax credits based on job creation for 2018. I forget the exact number. It was that they created 100 some jobs, mm-hmm. and I believe they needed 260 to qualify for the credits.
So there's a ways to go, and I know you'll be watching this. We'll probably get to talk to you about Foxconn again. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
John, my pleasure. Thank you.
Rick Rimmel is a reporter who covers business news for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. News is next. Then we look at the story of Juneteenth, a holiday commemorating the emancipation of enslaved people after the Civil War. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Juneteenth celebrates the emancipation of enslaved people after the end of the Civil War. We look at the long history of this holiday and where you can go in Wisconsin to celebrate it. What does Juneteenth mean to you and your family? How do you celebrate? Have you been celebrating Juneteenth for a long time? What are your favorite things about the holiday? Or maybe you just started celebrating Juneteenth. What do you like best about it? And will you make this one of your traditions? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Salika Duxworth Lawton is a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. She studies the intersection of race, the military, and the civil rights movement. Her book about armed self-defense during the civil rights movement is called Honorable Men, Armed Self-Defense, and the Deacons for Defense and Justice. That book is coming out this year. Salika, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me on.
The first ever Juneteenth was in 1865 in Texas, fully 2.5 years after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Tell us more about this. Why was it in Texas so long after the original proclamation?
Well, the last place to be freed was Galveston, Texas, and that's where the Union Army went. Slave owners refused to tell their enslaved property that they were free to treat them as humans. So enslaved people had to wait for the Union Army to get there to free them. So what happens is this takes, you know, even though it's about 2 years after emancipation, Texas is 897 miles across. So it really takes that long to first get the word out and then for people to begin to enforce the freedom. So you see the first ones in Galveston, and they spread across Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. And these are the oldest ones. People in the rural areas especially will keep up the more traditional Juneteenths as the picnic in the park linked to Memorial Day, which also came from the Civil War, where freed people would go and clean the cemeteries and especially clean the Civil War graves and leave flowers for the Civil War veterans. And it really takes until about 1867 for the Reconstruction Act to hit and remove the Black Codes, which essentially stripped guns from enslaved people and returned them to a place of slavery until the Reconstruction Congress intervened and the U.S. Army intervened.
Why is this this holiday, if you can call it that, a celebration? Why is it called Juneteenth?
Because it is the freedom. It's freedom of the slaves, and that freedom happened in June. Even though the Civil War ends in April 1865, you know, this is an age of telegrams. This is not an age of instant communication. It takes a little while. So they're celebrating the fact that freedom came in June.
Okay. So, as you say, the early celebrations were tended to be a small town phenomenon, picnics, cleaning the graves and so forth, linked to what was then called Decoration Day. Do you still see that tradition in small towns today?
Well, absolutely. We here in Eau Claire are running the Picnic in the Park. I'm our Juneteenth coordinator. And you still see that in a number of places, north and south, especially in the south where you're looking at places like Alabama, whereas more urban areas have turned Juneteenth into a giant festival. If you look at the one that just happened in Madison this past weekend, that was an arts festival with heritage boots. The one today that will be in Milwaukee at the Northcott Neighborhood House is also it's one of the largest in the country. It's four blocks, though, of vendors. A lot of vendors, a lot of activities. And that's part of the reason why June is now Black Music Month. It came off of the fact that these urban Juneteenth celebrations really became arts festivals in many ways and became a celebration of achievement and achievement against odds. The survival of African Americans.
Saleika Duxworth-Lawton is a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about Juneteenth in Wisconsin and how it's observed and celebrated. What does Juneteenth mean to you and your family? How do you celebrate? Have you been celebrating Juneteenth for a long time? What are your favorite things about the holiday? Join us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. During the early 20th century, we had something called the Great Migration. Millions of Black Americans migrated to Midwestern and Northern states over the course of this time. How did that affect Juneteenth? Did they bring the holiday with them or leave it behind?
They brought it with them, but it morphed. And you look at, for instance, in my husband's family, it's World War II when his mother's family migrated to Los Angeles from Arkansas, and his father also migrated from Arkansas first to Arizona and to Los Angeles. And the Los Angeles celebrations became, as I said, these large urban celebrations. And really, the urban celebrations became a celebration of survival, a celebration of achievement, and a celebration of African-American hope. In many ways, the civil rights movement will elevate that. And the idea of Juneteenth as a connection to this rural heritage for many urban people, to this heritage here in Milwaukee, it would be to Mississippi, to Alabama. In Los Angeles, it will be to Louisiana, to Texas. Places like New York, it will be Georgia, Florida. That connection to the rural roots of the majority of African Americans is very important. But even as things transfer, they change. And the urban celebrations, especially as we've had younger people come in, have really taken on a far different flavor than what you would see in the rural South.
One of our listeners shared over email that they enjoy the holiday but wish it had a different name so people would recognize it easier. They suggested Emancipation from Slavery Day. Saleika, what do you make of that? Should the name be a little more literal?
No, I think we just need to publicize it more. The thing is, it's been in the Black community, and the majority of people who are involved in Touchstone within the Black community understand what it is. But like Kwanzaa, people outside of the African-American community aren't going to know. So we need to publicize it more. But this is a part of our greater problem in the United States with not understanding our history and with not knowing especially African-American history. And that history is very important to all of us, no matter what our race is. So I wouldn't change the name Juneteenth because it historically links to this event for many people. I would publicize it. I would teach about it. I would love to see the schools teaching about Juneteenth and assigning things. And that's why we partner with the Eau Claire Area School District, in part to elevate the history of Juneteenth and to teach about it. Our teaching about the Civil War, to be honest, is fairly abysmal at the K-12 era level. And this is this lack of knowledge about Juneteenth and about Reconstruction is a part of Americans' lack of history knowledge.
And that's a whole discussion of its own, I think, in terms of how we teach history in general, and probably not just at the K-12 level, could extend even through college in some instances. Which brings up the question that I was thinking about earlier. Why isn't Juneteenth an official national holiday like July 4th or Memorial Day?
Well, really, it started off very local, and it stayed local within the African-American community. And African-Americans really have not pushed for it to be a national holiday. Even though we share it with multiple people, it has become, in part, a celebration of unity and a celebration of achievement for people of all races, and especially a unity with our white allies, the white officers of the black units in the Civil War. There really hasn't been the same kind of push as you saw with, for instance, Martin Luther King Day, where Coretta Scott King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference went all out to use their political power to push that as a national day of remembrance.
And I think we just lost our guest. Okay. And I probably am thinking we aren't going to get her back. There are Juneteenth celebrations going on all around Wisconsin. There's a picnic in Eau Claire. You can probably find out information on what's happening in your local area by searching the World Wide Web. It is handy for that kind of thing. Salika Duxworth-Lawton is a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. We appreciate her joining us for this segment of The Morning Show. She studies the intersection of race, the military, and the civil rights movement. She has a book coming out about armed self-defense during the civil rights movement called Honorable Men, Armed Civil Defense and the Deacons for Defense and Justice. That book is coming out this year. We're going to talk about weather coming up next on The Morning Show. Stay tuned for that. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Well, I don't know about you, but I had to turn on my furnace yesterday morning, something I didn't expect to have to do in June. What's up with this weather anyway? Cold and wet doesn't feel like a typical summer, does it? We talked to a meteorologist about what's impacting our temperatures and what to expect the rest of the week. Do you feel it's been cooler this month? Or maybe you feel, well, this is typical. It's on par with what you remember from past Junes. And what have you observed about the recent weather? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Mark Kavinsky is a forecaster for the National Weather Service based in Milwaukee. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Yeah, it may seem cooler this June compared to years past for some folks. So what do the records actually show, though, on that front? Are we really experiencing unusually cool temperatures?
Well, we checked, and so far this June, for the first 18 days of the month, it really, you know, it's felt pretty cool out there. Temperatures have been averaging below normal for the first 2 weeks, but we checked, and really it isn't that unusual. We checked for Madison, and it's about the 53rd coldest June on record, kind of middle of the pack, going back to all the records, you know, that we have. Milwaukee's about 51st coldest. In a kind of walk outside Milwaukee, it's about the 26th coldest. So it's really not that far off the norm. It's just felt that way. Green Bay is running about one degree below normal for the month. La Crosse is about 0.8 of a degree below normal. So we owe it all to the clouds and the showery weather that we've had for the first couple of weeks of June. It's carried over from May. May was really cloudy and cool. We owe it all to those steering winds in the mid-levels of the atmosphere. Those have kept us in a northwest to west flow that's resulted in occasional cold fronts coming through. And the cold fronts have brought occasional showers and a few thunderstorms to the area. But yet, so far in June, we have had a couple of days in the 70s and 80s. So that's resulted in, the temperatures kind of in the middle of the pack and far off normal.
I noticed that in your list of Wisconsin cities and their weather, you left out Superior. I can tell you, since I live here, that since the beginning of May, I think we've had at least 3 or 4 days every week when the wind has been out of the east or northeast. And for folks in Superior, that means the wind is coming in off of that 38-degree water in the Big Lake, and it's just been cold and wet here, and is really interfering with one of my retirement plans, which was to be able to wear shorts 12 months a year. Have we had a lot more northeasterly winds this spring and summer than we normally get? It just feels like we've been hit almost every day with it.
Well, John, I have a solution if you want to wear those shorts, every day of the year. Just head south.
Well, I spend my winters in Arizona for exactly that reason. I leave when the snakes wake up, though. So what's causing our temperatures? What are the factors that affect our temperatures this time of the year? What's the combination of factors that could produce cooler or warmer temperatures for us?
Well, like I said, the steering level winds, the steering winds at about 10,000 feet, those have been consistently out of the west and northwest, and those have been pulling down cool Canadian air, occasional cold fronts moving through the area. That's resulted in those winds switching to the northwest and then north and northeast up there in far northern Wisconsin, and that's been bringing the very cool air across Lake Superior into the Superior area. And otherwise, other areas across northern Wisconsin feeling the effects from the cool Great Lakes temperatures. I just checked what's going on at Lake Michigan, and it's running about 7 degrees below normal for this time of year. I just checked, and the average Lake Michigan temperature is running about 49, whereas for mid-June, it should be about 56. So that's 7 degrees below normal for this time of year, and that's similar to what we were seeing in 2014. So it's not all that unusual, but we are running about 7 degrees below the long-term average, which goes back to 1992, for Lake Michigan. I'm sure Lake Superior is also running well below the normal for this for mid-June.
Let's take a caller. Dan is calling in from Drummond this morning. And Dan, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
The thing is, this year is very much like the 1960s. We had a lot of rain many times, and there were 4th of July's when it was so cold at night that you had to have a heavy jacket on just to watch the fireworks. So I just think it's just a cycle in the weather.
All right, Dan in Drummond, thank you so much. What about it? We've had a lot of cold Junes and even the cold 4th of Julys. I remember a few of those. These things are cycles that happen in the weather, Mark?
I think we occasionally do get these cyclic type of high and low temperatures. That's how we end up with, we look at the 30-year average of temperatures, and we come up with the normal temperatures after looking at those 30-year averages. And so sometimes it's higher than the average, sometimes it's lower than the average, and it just all results in a 30-year average temperature for across cities across Wisconsin. So, you know, the one, there are benefits to the cool conditions is that the mosquitoes aren't as bad.
Well, you know, it's an ill wind that blows no one any good. Mark, some areas of Wisconsin have gotten a lot of rain in the last couple of months. How does the state's precipitation levels compare to years past?
Well, we were looking at above normal temperatures. Above normal precipitation for the month of May. I mean, most spots were about 2.5 to 3 inches above the normal for the month. March was below average, and April was closer to average. And so far in June, we're running a little bit below the normals at several spots. Madison's about 8/10 of an inch below normal. Milwaukee's about 2/10 of an inch above normal. Green Bay and La Crosse are both running about 1/10 to 1/2 inch below normal. So, you know, it's up and down across the state. Very, very. hit-and-miss showers and a few thunderstorms across the state so far this June. However, we are looking at more widespread showers and thunderstorms affecting the state, probably coming in Friday and then continuing off and on through the weekend.
Just in time.
Yeah, and there is one added benefit to the showers, thunderstorms. It looks like we'll have a period of a more seasonal temperature, so I think people will be very excited about that. We should be more consistently in the 70s and perhaps 80s across much of the state, starting Friday and continuing into early next week, even closer to Lake Michigan and Superior.
Let's take a quick call from Steve in Milwaukee. And, Steve, we're almost out of time.
Not a problem. It's just a quick comment. You know how wonderful Facebook is, and I'm bringing up memories. About 2 weeks ago, it showed me that the peonies in front of my house were in full bloom, and that's barely happening now. So I feel like we're 2 weeks behind spring.
Okay. All right. Steve says Facebook, a great way to keep track of how they of what the weather was like in the past. So what can we expect these last couple of weeks in June, Mark?
You know, I was taking a look at the long-term average, and it looks like we're going to stay with near or above normal temperatures right through the final 2 weeks of June. So that'll be good news. Everyone will be excited about that. And, you know, with those warmer temperatures, though, will be probably higher humidity at times. So hopefully people won't get too disgruntled by feeling a little bit more humid. But I'm willing to deal with that as long as we get the warmer weather.
You know how it is, Mark. No matter what the weather is, somebody finds something to complain about.
That's just true.
Human nature. Mark, thanks so much for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day, John.
You too. Mark Kaminsky is a forecaster for the National Weather Service based in Milwaukee. I hope wherever you are, you have great weather today. This is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.